Hello and welcome to the Paper Player Podcast. This is the podcast where we focus on the world of competitive Magic play in person. I'm joined here with my co-hosts, Jeff, JB, and Josh. Everybody on three, say hello. One, two, three.
Hello.
Welcome.
Cool, cool. And I'm your host, Tony. Before we get started, guys, I'm going to be asking you guys individually what you guys plan on bringing. What are you guys currently playing in Legacy right now? So, Josh, tell me what you're playing right now in Legacy.
FNM this Friday. I'm torn. So I traditionally am like a Delver player. Kind of been playing blue-red Delver for the last couple weeks. But I'm also kind of spiky, and now that I kind of have a feel for what the meta is, I'm thinking about switching to ninjas
nice.
This week because I want Plague Engineer.
Pretty good card. Right.
That's why.
Yeah, it's a good
JP, what are you playing?
I want to play Plague Engineer this week, I think.
Nice.
But keeping blue-red Delver in sleeves is very easy.
Yeah, right. JB, what do you got?
I mean, I'll probably just bring lands like always and maybe Audible into some kind of Delver shell sometimes, but most of the time it's just going to be lands.
Jeff, what do you got for us? What are you going to play this week?
Same thing I always play, Burn. It's the only thing. Nice. I don't know, I just enjoy it. I like counting to 20.
3, 6, 9,
yep.
12, 15, 18.
Deck's just so much fun.
You gotta hate cards like Uro.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I hated Uro when I played Brain.
Uro, I don't know. It's rough. Like, if I can land a Graft Digger's Cage and they don't have, like, obviously, like, the removal to stop it, I don't really care about them getting the 3 life the first time. I definitely think Uro is more annoying than Oko ever was for Burn, because you can hit them, like, what, you get, like, 2 turns before they can, like, really, like, gain life with it.
Yeah, I mean, you could kind of close the game out if you were lucky. The problem is it was able to create blockers as well,
yeah.
So that was a little bit more difficult with Oko, and plus the cards that came across or came along with Oko were even more obnoxious.
And, like, just with Uro, it's just you have a 6-6 body that I literally cannot swing through, like, ever. Killing it doesn't do anything unless it's exiled, so, like, honestly, like, it has made me contemplate switching to, like, a red-white, like, Burn style for Legacy, like, putting in Plateaus just to play, like, Path to Exile.
Yeah, sure.
Some of the, like, most deep words you've said to me about Uro was that, or when Oko was legal, was like, I would much rather see an Oko than an Uro. And then at first it didn't really make sense to me. I was like, Oko sticks around and just wins the game to me, and Uro goes to the graveyard and you just win. But seeing the, like, format evolve and, like, over time, I think Uro is much worse of a threat for Burn than Oko ever was.
Oh,
you
yeah.
could beat an Oko.
And just, you just red blast it with a red deck, and you're kind of like, the problem solved, whereas if you red blast the Uro,
they just cast it,
you gotta get it. Exactly. They just keep going.
So, I thought you were talking about possibly switching into something new, because I know you've been picking up cards.
Yeah, I've been thinking about blue-white, but every time I think about it, I'm just like, I hate playing control decks. That's the problem. Like, I hate, like,
you would not like me. Blue,
I hate going land go.
I tried it. You wouldn't like it.
I hate going land go. That's my problem. I mainly, like, a lot of the stuff I've been picking up has been more for modern. I want to in modern switch from burn to the black white hammer deck.
Okay.
But in legacy, like, I thought about, like, picking up Tundras and switching to blue white, but I think if anything, I'm going to try to make burn better and just add a little bit of splash of white. Pick a plat.
Nice.
And plateaus are cheaper.
Burn definitely scales with reps.
Agreed.
Definitely.
I mean, I would say that's true about, like, 95% of decks.
Right. But, like, in Legacy, like, knowing your matchup with Burn, well, like, I guess this with anything, but, like, you need to with Burn. It's the learning curve with Burn in Legacy is very steep.
Sure. Yeah. The deck I plan on bringing this week is the Sultai Shell with the Chain of Smog combo in it. I've been on that list. That list has been a lot of fun, and a lot of people don't realize the potency of that deck and kind of how to interact with it just yet. So if individuals are not playing on MTGO, they're not familiar with it. So as I run into new people, they have to read both Chain of Smog and either the Apprentice or the Sedgemoor Witch, and they're just completely confused.
Lots
usually.
Of people are hot on that Sedgemoor Witch too.
The card's great.
That's exactly why I'm switching to Plague Engineer this week. That's why. I was like, why did I want to bring in Plague Engineer? It's because of Sedgemoor Witch. And
sure.
Now I remember.
I was going to ask, does that deck run Force of Will?
Yeah.
My deck?
Yeah, okay. Because yeah. I was like, doesn't it just die to, like, any removal? But I guess, like, you have Force of Will and Force of Negation to back it up.
You got a lot
you
of.
You don't
fun
ever
tricks
want to force. You don't want to force anything in like.
Not in fair matchups.
Yeah.
You only use it for like an emergency. Like if this lands, right. Like I'm gonna lose right now. So I mean, there's a corner case for everything. But realistically, when it comes to like Sedgemoor Witch, I really love when people go to like bolt it. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, you can pay three. They're like, yeah. Like I'll pay three. And they're like, all right, I'll con, all right. That's like my best. That's my favorite interaction. Like, yeah, okay, I'll con, all right. So the few topics I want to kind of go over today, we're going to go a little bit into spoilers. A lot came out. I believe the full set is out as of June 2nd. Out. Yes. There's a lot to kind of talk about, but we're only going to go over three cards each just because there's so many things coming in. Mm-hmm. And then after that, after we talk about the spoilers, I want to talk about the actual return of FNM. And I think that's going to be really exciting because for us and kind of the communities around us, we are fortunate enough to have the restrictions be lifted. And a lot of our stores that are kind of still on lockdown or pseudo lockdown are actually opening up and having their first FNM, official FNM. And I think that's really exciting.
I think the Milwaukee FNM scene is very tight-knit and very supportive. I think the FNM scene here in Milwaukee is very strong, and everyone gets along, and every time is a good time.
Yeah, of course. Like, I can go to any store, and I never feel outcast, and I usually see a familiar face. And most of the time, it's what store you go to is determined on, like, how convenient, I would say.
It's also, I think the stores you go to also have, like, a competitive scale, too. I think the stores can scale competitively.
Mm-hmm. I mean, most of the FNMs do. There's always a, you know, big fish, little pond kind of feel. With the spoilers coming out, I'd like for whoever picked those cards, I'd like you to read that card. So I think, JB, did you start off with this card?
I did. So My first pick for spoilers is Ignoble Hierarch, which is a 1 green for a 0/1 with Exalted. And you can tap it to add a black, a red, or a green. So it's just the Jund version of Noble Hierarch.
So I guess let me ask you this. What impact do you think this is going to have on Modern or even Legacy?
So I know at some point Jund was playing in Modern Birds of Paradise, right? And everyone always talked about how, oh, you know, it's a little bit weaker just because it doesn't have the Exalted that you get from playing Bant with Noble Hierarch.
Noble Hierarch.
And while...
Yeah, you can't win the Tarmogoyf Mirror.
Yeah, and while having Exalted isn't going to make it amazing... I think it's just one more step in the right direction of playing a more aggressive and fast version of Jund where you're rushing out like Bloodbraid or just big creatures in general. And we saw Jund go from being like fat mid-range stuff down to playing only 2-mana costers to be able to play Lurrus for a while there because Lurrus was just a better option. And I think this might open the door again to go back to the more traditional Jund.
Hi, Josh. Tell me what you think, and do you kind of agree with some of the things that JB said?
I have a story about this card, but I agree with what JB is saying, and for most of it, I don't think Jun's going to play this deck. I think this will find a home in other decks. I'm sure Jund will play it. Whether or not it's a 4/2/2/2, that's will be remained to be seen. But I think this deck will offer a lot to Modern in the sense that it'll spawn a lot of new decks.
I'm with you on that.
What I want to say about this card is back when Commander Legends came out, after the release weekend and all that, I got like foil etched Urlok, and like that was always a deck I wanted to build, and like I immediately started ripping through my collection and pulling out cards for that deck. And then one of the first things I said while I was doing that in one of my group checks was like, it's not fair that there isn't a spicy Llanowar Elves.
Yeah, right.
And I like made a meme. I posted it to Reddit. I got a bunch of upvotes on the Circle Jerk subreddit. But we're just the Llanowar Elves that tap for red, because there's one for every other color, right? Besides blue.
Yeah.
But like a green mana dork that tap for red. Totally seemed like a fair Magic card to me, and I made that argument.
Yeah.
This is more than I ever asked for, and I congratulate whoever designed this card. This is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Jeff, what do you think about it?
I think it goes in Jund. I mean, if you're running Jund with Birds of Paradise, this I feel like just is better because like it's adding the colors you need. It pumps your Tarmogoyf for Tarmogoyf mirror matches, like just makes all your creatures better. I don't know. I don't know if it sees play in Legacy. Is there a Jund deck in Legacy even? I don't actually know.
I don't even... The only deck that plays Noble in Legacy that I can really think of is, like, Infect.
Humans.
Yeah.
Well, I think those like Aluren decks and the what's it called? What is that stupid deck?
I'm sure there's
that...
some Mant control deck that I haven't.
No,
heard
legit. I do think that. They're...
Right.
Yeah.
What about you, Tom?
So this card, I don't think it's playable in Jund at all. I think it's a zero shot that it'll get played. And the only reason is you have to show me what one drop you're taking out instead of this card. And the benefit to this card is like turn toing a Lily. The deck for a modern sake is already designed to turn to like a turn one Thoughtseize, kind of disrupt the hand, and then follow that up with like a Ren and Six. So that's kind of your value there. I think the days of Liliana are just nowhere near strong. So one of the best things I like about Modern Horizons right now is kind of opening up our eyes to what could be. So decks like Collected Company, is there a Jund version of it that would play this instead of Noble Hierarch? Or Black Green Infect instead of Blue Green Infect? Like where you want to go from here? Because you have different options. And one of the best parts about this card in particular is it kind of just gets you to kind of look where else you're going to go. And there's a lot of other supporting casts. Like this card into Imperial Recruiter seems fantastic. Like it just seems really where you want to be. And that's more of a Collective Company style deck.
See, and
home
I think
run
that's
out of the park.
That's one of my biggest problems when it comes to evaluating cards, is that I'm always looking at what is and what was, not what could be.
Right.
So we've been talking about how all these cards are coming out, and there's all these new, you know, archetypes that might come out for it. And I think, like the Imperial Recruiter issue last week, where I was only thinking humans because I saw the word human and I thought of digging for a human, I see this and I instantly think, well, it's got to go into Jund because, you know, Jund kind of wants this. So, and I think that's my problem, is like I always bring these things to the table because I just want them to go in the old decks that I like.
That's my problem with Modern Horizons right now. It's like it's too much going on. Usually we only have to evaluate a few cards that might be splashing into our formats. And with the original Modern Horizons, the first one, there were new cards that came to it, but there was a lot of things that got shadowed in that set just because of like Hogak. And a lot of people didn't realize how good Hogak was. I was one of them. Same with Astrolabe. So with this set, with so many different, I guess, the color shifted versions of cards, it really kind of opens your eyes to where things can go.
With this card, I think it's easier to let the internet figure out where this is going to go in Modern and just plan on what you want to put this in what EDH deck. Like,
right.
Put this in an EDH deck or build a new one.
I'd just say go get four right away.
Right.
Like, don't miss
this card.
It's
easily is going to start at 15, climb to $25 easy.
JB, what do you got for the next card?
I picked Inevitable Betrayal, which is a suspend card. It's suspend 3, and it costs 1 and 2 blue. And then it's search target opponent's library for a creature card and put that card onto the battlefield under your control. Then that player shuffles. So the reason I chose this card is because I thought we've been talking about a couple of other suspend cards possibly seeing play. And with Cascade being a thing that's coming back a little heavier in the set, along with the fact that As Foretold has been getting really hyped up in the community in general, I think this card is a very good card to have against 90% of the field.
Big number, man. 90% is a lot.
I don't think I take this to a 5K or anything.
Well, I think this card's actually going to be better in the sideboard. I think if Shardless Agent is like somehow, some shape or form a deck, imagine going against like Tron and you're like, I'll take your Ulamog and I'm going to kill you with it. Or you go against Primeval Titan decks and you get a Primeval Titan, though you don't get the advantages like their deck does, just being able to do those things. So I guess how big is the creature? And I can only imagine playing against like Reanimator and like Legacy with this deck, right? Or this card and just steal their Grizzlebrand. It's like, oh my goodness. Like that's where I think the card is absurd.
I don't think it'll see play in a 60 card format. Unless there's some like cute interaction. Unless there's some like cute like deck you can build.
I mean, already run that one card. Was it Bribery?
Yeah, that card costs 5.
Like, it depends on the meta. Yeah, it depends on the meta. But if your meta supports it, then it's probably like a solid sideboard choice. But I think this is a cube card and that's about it. Okay. Maybe an EDH card if you want to make your playgroup mad at you.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this card just because of As Foretold. Like, the ability to just turn 3 Bribery is so much different than turn 5 Bribery. It's really big. And then with As Foretold decks, you can, if you were to build that style deck, it could spawn that type of deck that could also exist in Legacy.
Like,
I know.
And then you bump into Oops All Spells, but I guess then you just get their Balustrade Spire or whatever.
And then
what's the combo deck that doesn't play any creatures?
You can go and play Doomsday and take their only Thassa's Oracle.
Yes.
You Is Ad Nauseam still good in Modern?
No, that deck died.
Is there a deck that doesn't play a creature in Modern?
Sure there is. Storm doesn't play. I guess they play Baral and a Goblin Electromancer.
There's
but...
always some blue-white player that has a deck with no creatures in it.
Yeah, usually. It's or like a Snapcaster. Which
always.
That's why I'm saying this card's more of a sideboard card, because in certain matchups, it can just be a complete blowout.
Right.
Like just being able to steal people's Grizzlebrands or Emrakuls. Like imagine playing against like a Through the Breach deck and you're an Azor Ahd deck, and your Azor Ahd deck it's probably gonna be Living End most likely. It'll probably be blue green Living End because you have Shardless Agent. And then you're just like, okay, in some matchups where I'm going against like a giant idiot deck or a giant guy deck, I'll just go and get four of these out of my sideboard and just as fast as I can hit Shardless Agent to then take their Emrakul. You're gonna be faster at taking their Emrakul.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jeff. Tony and JV, what cards out of your sideboard are you taking out to put this in?
As my Azor Ahd deck? I don't know yet. You only need one copy of this because you can
as your Azor Ahd deck?
Yeah, I'm just saying like if okay. There is an Azor Ahd deck, like there is a blue what? A mono blue Azor Ahd Living End deck or a blue white one with Ardent Plea and Azor Ahd, and you could kind of get into there like into that. You could take out your Living Ends and bring in this instead.
Right.
That's where okay. that would like that deck already exists and. What is something that could push it over the edge? This might be one of the cards. There's a couple other cards that could do that as well too.
I was like, what cards from your Uro pile sideboard do you take out?
I mean, this doesn't it would never go in there. Right. I'm not, yeah. This isn't like a Red Elemental Blast. This is a designated deck that can abuse the ability just to the, like especially if you're gonna play like Shardless Agent.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Living End's gonna come back, right?
Oh, of course.
Bant, I think there's going to be a Bant Living End deck because now you have Ardent Plea and the Shardless Agent, and this card could easily just slide these in the sideboard and then just wait, in your matchups where you're not trying. Yeah, I mean, they're already playing, like, what, Violent Outburst? So you can either go, like, Rug with it now, you can go Bant with it if there's better, like, creatures to cycle. It all depends on what you're cycling, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Out of the next one.
My third card is Yavimile, Cradle of Growth. It is a legendary land. And each land is a forest in addition to its other land types. So when it's on the field, it creates... Everyone has forests, just kind of like how Urborg would create all swamps. It's all forests.
Yeah, it's color-shifted Urborg.
Of course you picked this card.
Well, yeah, of course I do. Because I think... I've been having some debates with some other people about it, but there's the Riftstone Portal, which is something that the lands deck in Legacy has played off and on, but... I believe this card is going to be better for the deck than Riftstone Portal because Riftstone Portal requires you to get it into the graveyard somehow. And it's a lot easier to get lands out of your graveyard than it is to get specific lands into your graveyard with that deck. So a lot of the times, I'd much rather be able to have a Yavimile or have this card in my hand and be able to play it on turn one, whereas the Riftstone Portal is almost a worthless land. If I can't get it in the graveyard immediately.
Right. Josh, tell me what your thoughts are about this card. I have some opinions on it.
My story with this card is the last you make the card, Waste Not One.
Mm-hmm.
My submission was this, but islands. My submission was each land is an island in addition.
Forest Blue.
The island version would be actually good of this one because you can play
like
a bunch of indestructible.
Talarian Shores or something like that.
Sure.
I named it. Mm-hmm. But. This card is another home run, knock out of the park. Commander All-Star goes in every single green commander deck. I mean, this card is pure value in anything. It's just like you can put Urborg for no reason other than like it helps their mana base. So like,
Jeff, what do you think about it?
No questions.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, like it's green. Orberg, like I think it's good. I think it'll see play, but like I'm not like super hyped about it. Like
I love this card. Cool. It's so good, but I have a love-hate relationship. I'm so salty that this card exists, and it's only because it goes right into elves.
Right. I'm very
That's
salty.
True. It does my cradle better.
What makes cradle? You can
Bounce it with that Querying Dryad. Oh my god.
Yeah.
And Querying Dryad's in this set, right?
Well, there's no Gaia's Cradle in modern, but yeah.
But that's still, now that I think about it, you can just bounce your... Good thing they got rid of the blue Eldraine one. Mystical...
Oh, yeah, Sanctuary? Oh, that would be stupid.
Yeah, Sanctuary. I almost had Mystical... I forgot. It's been so long since I played with the card. I almost had Mystical Tower.
Nice. Yeah. So the interaction that it has in Legacy, like, Elves is already probably out of all the tribal decks, got to be the best one, right? And it's just got a little bit more now. Especially like I don't see a list not playing at least one to two of these.
Scary. I don't ever want to play all the time I'm playing.
Yeah,
it just makes Grand Dryad so much more powerful.
I was about to say it just makes it so much easier for them to combo out because now they don't need a second Cradle or like a crop rotation in hand in order to go get Cradle.
Where do you think this card lands price wise?
$20, $15. It's going to be wanted for every single green EDH and every black green EDH.
I think like with the legacy demand, it might end up at like $50. Look at Alish Saurus Shepherd.
Like, that also had like a like huge limited print.
It was also a mythic or whatever.
And a four of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This card's not a four of.
In legacy, in elves, you don't think it's a four of?
No.
I mean, they don't chain well at all.
Maybe a three of.
I would play two. You have crop rotation, so when you want to go get it, you can.
And it's also like, a that's the best part. Land, so if you end up with two in your hand, you feel real bad.
Yeah.
In elves, though, do you?
Yes.
No, you don't. I mean, you can bounce it. I mean, the argument is like you don't need multiple copies of this because if your guy's cradle is already good, it's good. But the fact that you like say you have three creatures, you can you know, play this, and then with your guy's cradle, you tap for three, bounce it back with Quarian Dryad, maybe add some more mana with Heritage Root, and then play the guy's cradle, go up again, and then all of a sudden you're at nine mana. Then you can just go get Cradle Hoof like out of nowhere.
Well, that's what
like,
I
that's where I think the crazy part is.
The combo gets easier to do. It's just a lot simpler to do now.
Yeah.
Where do you think the old border foils of this card end up price wise?
$200.
Right.
Probably 200 for sure. It looks so pretty as old as old border.
But there's so many cards that people are going to want old border foil.
I think this might be one of the chase ones.
For sure it is. I mean, this is
like every single green EDH deck wants this.
Yep.
Okay.
Even like Eldrazi Tron wants it too. Like they already play an Urborg in like the legacy version because they can make
regular Tron
stuff.
Wants it.
Yeah, probably. Seriously, it's probably good enough to play in a regular Tron.
Mm-hmm.
You just replace one forest with it.
Do you even need the forest? You could just replace all your forests with it.
No, because you don't want to end up with two in hand.
Well, they just don't chain well.
Sure, yeah. Right. Maybe two and two, but
okay.
It does feel the run steal thing. But yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited for this card.
Read it off, Jeff.
So it's Bloodbraid Marauder. It costs a red and one for a 3/1. Bloodbraid Marauder can't block. And then Delirium, the spell has Cascade as long as there are four or more types among cards in your graveyard. And the reason I picked this card is I know Blitz kind of took over for the Prowless deck kind of in Modern, but I think like the Mono Red Prowless deck would be perfectly fine with this because I feel like you can hit the Delirium really easily and then all of your one drops that you hit are either a burn spell or a creature that like can swing. So like I don't see a problem with that. It's like two for one-ing for two. And I think it's better than what is that one card, Abita Carol Keep, because you have to actually pay for the card that like reveals,
right?
So I think it has some potential in like Modern. I don't know if maybe the Blitz deck is just going to be better and like Mono Red Prowess won't even be like playable even with this, but I don't know. I'm really like excited for this card.
JB, tell me what you think.
I am more looking at it in the terms of, you know, the classic magical Christmas land where I'm going Bloodbraid into Shardless Agent into this thing into something else and just getting nothing but like value out of it and getting like 100 cards on the board. But I can see the applications in the idea that it's a big power for a deck like the Prowess deck, and I think it could find a slot in there. Although everything in the burn deck is usually instant, right? There's not a ton of sorceries.
With the Prowess deck, there's more sorceries.
You could play that Mishra's Bauble and stuff too, but I still think this card's a trap.
I'm with you, Josh. I think this card is designed for a different deck. And as far as like Prowess and Burn, I don't know if they have a slot for it. The fact that it itself doesn't have like haste makes it like real bad. Like, sure, you can hit a Goblin Guide off it or a Lava Spike or what have you, but the 3/1 that can't block. If you're not cascading this on turn two, where's the value turn five? Then it's like, okay, well, can't you just, like, I would rather have a bolt instead of this, even though this has the potential to hit a bolt. In the Prowess deck, it's just a spell density, and you have to remove one of your spells now for, like spell density, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, what does the Prowess deck play right now? It plays 12 creatures.
It's four Swiftspear, four Soulscar Mage. I think it's anywhere from two to four Bedlam Revelers, and I think that's it.
I think they play Kiln Fiend.
If there's Kiln Fiend list, and then you can go into a Boros list that plays the new Magecraft guy.
Yeah, the one drop.
So, yeah.
The flavor is really cool. The design is really cool. It definitely will breed some inspiration, and people will try it, and I don't blame you for trying it. I don't think it's good enough for a 60 card like competitive format. It's definitely fine for FNM or tabletop or like casual, but I wouldn't take it to a 5K.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think that where this card is good is if there's a guaranteed spell that you could hit for zero. Like, let's say if you could use one of those bust to suspense spells, and then the ability to bounce, like, let's say you have Ancestral was a Visions, and you were to play this, and then you had a way to bounce your creature, and then play this again, and then get six cards. I think that's where, like, the absurdity comes with this ability. But you have to have a guaranteed spell slot. And the fact that now, like, Cascade decks, usually, like, the lowest Cascade we've ever had was three. This is the first time we've ever had two. So what would that have to look like? And, I mean, those decks already are able to play, like, Brazen Borrower and things like that, because that gets around
that. Now that I'm thinking about it, you could play this in a red deck with a Seal of Flame would work.
Yeah, that would get your Delirium, right?
And
for
you could also, with the... The Mishra's Bauble also triggers prowess. Like, you could do some cute things with it.
And there was a point where there were burn decks that were playing Lurrus. Right, so I could see something like that too, if you're going to start talking about bringing in Bauble and...
Well, you got to hit Delirium. So, like, those are two, low cards that you also wouldn't mind, like, cascading into. Like, that's pretty much 2-mana, 3/1, can't block draw card.
Yeah, he fits right into it too. So,
get that Goblin Tarfire in there, get that tribal up.
Yeah,
and Cascade casts, so you get a prowess trigger too, right?
Yeah,
I would like to see this in like a kind of a busted shell. All right, next card.
So, my next card was Upheaval, 2 blue and 4, sorcery, return all permanents to their owner's hand. And the reason I picked this card is I feel like every time this card pops up anywhere, it's always like questioned if it's going to be good or not. And I was more actually curious what you guys think, if this is going to be good.
How many people do you think there is a deck? Magic because they have to play against this game?
One of those nightmare cards to definitely go against.
I don't want to, like, I want to think it's unplayable, but Magic players are very imaginative.
Yeah.
At first, I thought, like, oh, man, there's got to be, like, a Storm deck or a combo deck with this. But then I realized, like, you don't really have, like, that many mana rocks. Mm-mm. So I feel like that's what really makes, like, Upheaval normally really good. So maybe it's okay to put it into Modern.
Yeah, I think
you
it's fine.
You could do it in, like, a Nissa deck where you double all your mana with Nissa.
Yeah, and then drop a Nissa and maybe a land in the same turn.
Right.
Yeah,
and recast her or whatever.
I quit.
I mean, look,
that was the first thing I said.
Not even worth it.
You don't think I'm going to make a meme deck with Urza and this, where it's just Urza Cheerios, where it's every zero mana artifact, what all mana I'm playing? Oh my god.
Urza, this is probably will end up on the ban list if Urza doesn't. Because Urza makes all your dinky artifacts into mana rocks.
Yeah,
but the problem is like, Urza doesn't have a real way to protect itself if you're going to be doing something like that to begin with. So, because your hand is just. You're basically playing everything out on the field for nothing, and you cast Urza, pray that it works, and then maybe draw a bunch of cards, right?
Yeah, it's, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's definitely difficult. There's got to be a meme deck for it. I don't know if it's gonna be good, but Upheaval is just one of those, you know, watch out cards, and it's like they got to make sure they avoid fast mana, and if fast mana becomes like a thing, just the reset button's super obnoxious. Even like, let's say you Upheaval and somehow float enough mana for a 3-mana. Planeswalker of any kind is like, damn, like you're just gonna end that game so fast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not in the next one. Nice. This is what we were talking about last week. All right, Jeff, tell me what you think.
So persist. It costs a black and one for a sorcery, return target non-legendary creature card from the graveyard to the battlefield with a -1/-1 counter on it. And the reason I put this on the list is because last week I had the search for a non-legendary card and put it into the graveyard, and I had the White Angel, where you pick a card type and give pro. We were talking about there really isn't a good reanimator spell, and lo and behold, next week they release Persist, and I think this card is going to be a problem.
It's really cheap, man. That's for damn sure. Like, I'm just thinking things like Sundering Titan. Mm-hmm. That's like where a mono black Sundering Titan list that you could even play this. Seriously, like that's where this card is frightening.
The flavor on this card is amazing. The artwork is out of the park. This card gets 5 stars all day. It's going to bring a new deck into Modern. There's no doubt about that. Can't say anything bad about this card.
We finally reanimate Blightsteel and it's good.
You can't reanimate Blightsteel because when it goes to the graveyard, it shuffles.
Oh, yeah, you are correct. This is sorcery.
Yeah.
So Sundering Titan's our biggest threat.
Yep. Sundering Titan, Inkwell Leviathan. There are a bunch of cards. Seriously, like this, like the
Blazing Archon.
15 Worm.
Yeah,
that's the good one.
The other card that we talked about. It's just what is your target and what you're doing with it, and is it going to be strong enough to be in that format realistically? And with Sundering Titan is just so devastating for your opponent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, JB?
Oh, I was just going to say that I think you need to be getting a creature that makes a huge board presence that like really tilts it in your favor. So something like Sundering Titan is perfect for it.
Yeah, that's the easy go-to. Sundering Titan's going to end up on the ban list.
Probably.
You should have never made that card to begin with. That card's so disgusting.
I love that you can play like Sundering Titan with Urborg, so then one of their things is a swamp, so you don't have to target your own swamps.
Now you can do it with the green
now
one,
you
too.
Do it with the mountain, or green, black. Green, black is an easy reanimator deck, too. That's
you don't want to add more colors to your deck, but I guess you could do
but
that.
But you get that, you get that MDFC that lets you get a card back from your graveyard. You could build a bad green. It wouldn't even be bad. You could build a green-black reanimator deck.
I mean, this is going to be destined for like a black-red reanimator deck. We don't have good draw
right.
spells, but
the
you do have like
red Madness reanimator.
Yeah. You do have Cathartic Reunion and Tormenting Voice to kind of like turbo through deck, and then you have the search card. So it's just a matter of like how consistently can you do this on turn three is going to be the discussion. And then with that being on turn three, how bad are you going to get blown out by cards like Surgical, Scavenging Ooze, and all those style cards?
Mm-hmm. My green black FNM deck is going to be great though. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be nice. Next one.
This was me. Mm-hmm. Josh is spoiling Dothley Voidwalker. Black for a 3/2 Dothi Rogue with Shadow. If a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, instead exile it with a Void counter on it. You can then tap and sacrifice Dothi Voidwalker to choose an exiled card an opponent owns with a Void counter on it. You may play that card without paying its mana cost this turn. I think this is the best card in the set.
Very scary. Like it has the highest potential for sure.
You just mill your opponent constantly.
It immediately gets like it go immediately becomes a staple in a lot of formats because you can now play Leyland of the Void in your main.
It's a removal one, but yes.
Right. It's still like the value of having that in your main deck. Imagine how it feels being like a oops all spells player right now, or I can't think of any other graveyard decks. I'm not familiar with Modern, but like even in Legacy. If you were a reanimator player in Legacy now, do you like think about playing removal in your main deck? Do you play Fatal Pushes now?
If this card becomes a problem, then yeah.
Yeah. I think this card will become a problem. This immediately gets spots in your deck if you're building a new deck.
You put Void counter on their Gristlebrand, and the next turn you just play it.
And oh, yeah. I mean,
so the Void counter goes on the Gristlebrand. They kill this Void Walker. Three turns later, you play another Void Walker, and you can cast that Gristlebrand still.
Yeah.
For sure. This card's got a lot of potential. It's realistically, this card is combo with Thoughtseize, but it's only as good as the strength of your opponent's deck. That's where the downside of this card is. So if your opponent's deck is a Lurrus deck, there's not a lot of like value to be had there, except for you stop things going in the graveyard from a Lurrus deck. But the more, like, in modern sense, Tron, like, your Thoughtseize, their Karn, is unbelievable when you have this card. And they don't have any real way in a Tron-style deck now, as far as, like, a main deck to deal with this card. So that's where I think the power is. But if you go against, like, a burn deck, this card is laughable. It doesn't do anything. Can't even block. It's got Shadow.
3/2 unblockable is still good, though.
Yeah, but not when you're playing against a burn deck where you need
against
to block.
Burn. It depends on how prevalent burn is in your meta.
So there's the dream case scenario where it's really strong, and then the ability to stop those cards. But a lot of decks have answers for it in the main deck, like Lightning Bolt, Push Path, I'll get this, and also Swords Plasher. So from a main deck standpoint, it's strong, and yes, you get Thoughtseize.
Answer it though. It's a must answer card.
Yep, it is. I don't disagree. The only downside is it's double black, so your mana base, if you're in like a two color or a three color deck, you start getting punished because you need to kind of aggressively get fetches. And if you're getting two swamps in your three color deck right in the beginning, you're gonna get punished. By Wasteland pretty bad.
Going back to last week when we were talking about Grief, and you were like, well, we couldn't find like a card to follow up with Grief. This is a great follow-up.
Oh, absolutely. This card is awesome.
Right.
It's scary.
The black-white Ephemerate deck has definitely got some legs, and like now it's got a torso.
I'm even thinking now, the more I think about it, like imagine if you Wastelanded your opponent's land and play there. Can you know you get the sacrifice to play, or is it cast? No, you may play it. Okay, you can steal their cards. You can steal their lands.
Oh,
it's kind of funny.
Weird.
Right.
Yeah, it's got a weird ability on it, but it's definitely main deckable. And then like it's Is the stock of Thoughtseize just going through the roof right now?
I hope so.
No, it's been reprinted into oblivion.
Yeah.
Alright.
Nice. Alright, man. Next card.
Next card is Tide Shaper, which is costs a single blue mana for a 1/1 merfolk wizard. You can kick it for one. When Tide Shaper enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, target land becomes an island for as long as Tide Shaper remains on the battlefield, and Tide Shaper gets +1/+1 as long as the opponent controls an island. So it's effectively a 1/1 kick it to make a spreading seas.
Yeah, I mean, this card's great. I like this.
This card's great. This card pairs well with what I said was the best card in the set last week. The other 1/1 Merfolk, Rishadin Merfolk. I like what they're doing with the Merfolk deck. I've never been a Merfolk player. I've always appreciated the deck, but it's the epitome of fair magic.
What's interesting to me is that, this card. You know, Merfolk's never been the best deck or really, really good or anything, but there was a minute where Merfolk decks were playing Spreading Seas. So now you have that option minus the draw. So is the draw worth it in terms of a Merfolk deck? Probably not, because you have this Merfolk that's going to be a 2/2 immediately, and it gets buffed by everything else you got. So I feel like this is perfect for that deck, and I think it's a really good addition to it.
Sophia in Legacy, this card is a 2/2 for one a lot of the
time.
Yeah,
sure. It's Mara. Right. I think you guys are looking at this from, because it says,
I didn't even think of it like that. Wow, Jeff, open my eyes.
It's always a 2/2. It's just like going to be live.
Yeah. It's always a 2/2 in Legacy. Wow, the Merfolk deck is getting a couple of bones.
So I think of this card very differently. It says the word Merfolk on it. It doesn't mean Merfolk to me. I think this card is going to be spawning a different style of Blue Moon deck where you play a Blood Moon, and then any basics, you either Spreading Seas or Tide Shaper it.
I like
and you
that.
Can also hit Forests with Utopia Sprawl to make the Utopia Sprawls fall off. I think that's going to be really key.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
You're like nice forest. Bang!
Next level.
Seriously, I think that's where it's going to be.
Why wouldn't you want to just play Spreading Seas instead then?
This card attacks.
This attacks.
It's
yeah.
Really attacks. And two. I mean, come on. You know about the
doesn't attack, it draws the removal out of it.
I'm going to play both. I'm going to play both cards.
Okay. And then your Lord lives.
Well, legit, like, I'm thinking in the sense of, like, a Blood Moon deck where you can punish people's mana bases, and then whatever basics, assuming they're not already, like, in a blue deck, you can just snipe their mountains, their swamps and their forests. Just, I'm realistically, I like this card in combination with Utopia Sprawl and how popular that card is already in Modern. Just being able to just, like, you know, you go land, go, they go land, Utopia Sprawl, you go land, snipe your Utopia Sprawl, nice deck.
Right.
Nice forest, bro.
Island. Yeah, good luck tapping any of your stuff with that. Nice Harbor Elf that you can't cast now. So that's where I think the power of this card is. And in combination with Spreading Seas, being able to just lock people out of their mana base, I think that's where the strength of this card is. Yes, it's a Merfolk, and sure, Merfolk needs a bone, and making your opponent have an island so all your island walk creatures can get them, that's cute and all. But Merfolk's, to me, still dead deck, and until they get something a little bit more busted that could warp their metagame other than just 12 lords, I don't know if they're going to be any better. Like, if you look at what Goblins is today, how many lords does Goblins play? Do they play any?
Yeah, they play Chieftain for the haste, and then they play War Chief for the minus and cost.
The war, so Lord effects, I guess, I consider this like +1/+1. So I guess the Chieftain is there.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. They play Chieftain, and they do play a Goblin, a one of Goblin Trashmaster to stop turn one Grafdigger's Cage, and he is the Lord.
Nice.
But it's a one of.
So yeah, I just think the Merfolk 12 Lord sex probably not good enough anymore.
That card still gets the chef's kiss from me.
I do. Yeah. Like
next up, Goblin Anachromancer. Anachromancer?
Yeah, it's hard to say.
I can't read it with the old border. Goblin Anachromancer. Costs a red and a green. It is a 2/2 Goblin Shoblin, and each spell you cast that's red or green costs one generic mana less to cast. This is a red-green color-shifted Goblin Electromancer, but does Goblin Electromancer say instant and sorceries?
Specifically instant and sorceries, but essentially it's going to be the same.
This card says red or green spells.
Yeah, so it's pretty strong.
This card's very, very strong.
This makes a green ooze the same cost as Empty the Worms.
This also makes your Squirrel Storm from last week, which I was saying was a really good card, cost only a single green mana. So now you can go like cancer, 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 cancer.
Yeah, I mean, this could be there. This card is definitely designed for a green red storm, and that's where I think people want to target it. But
Want to
this card could
see
also
what
be
the
really
red
abused.
green storm looks like.
I'm thinking more along like, is this card? I want to see what this card looks like with other spells. I guess like, could you do get cheaper Garrix? I mean, you already can do that with like mana dorks, right? But imagine your entire deck is cheaper with this.
Right.
There is a Gruul archetype in Modern at the moment. That's it's not the best, but I know people play it, and would this be able to fit in there to make creatures cheaper so you could just keep slapping stuff on the table?
Yeah.
I think this card will breed a lot of new decks.
Three
Like
mana
not
questing beast, anyone?
I'll think you'll see storm decks. I'll think you'll see decks that are doing some weird shenanigans we can't even think about. And I think you'll just find traditional like Riot. What's that 3 mana Rhythm of the Wild?
Spellbreaker.
Like a
Oh,
rhythm.
that card. Yep.
Like just like not like that card in particular, just a, like a deck of that style where you're playing like big like under-costed creatures. I think this card will definitely breed some ingenuity into the modern format.
Does John play this?
Zero
No.
shot. Too many black spells. No, the legitimately with this card, I think it's mainly designed for green red storm that they're trying to push. As far as like those
It's
examples I gave
very cool.
earlier, you'd have to convince me of an argument where it's like your mana dork doesn't do the same thing as what this card does. Because how many spells are you actually getting? Like how many spells are you casting that are becoming cheaper? Yes, this in multiples is even better, but then like how big are your spells? And how big do you want to go? So it's realistically like how large are your spells and how good is this in multiples? And isn't just like Arbor Elf, Utopia Sprawl like just stronger?
Some Seasons Past
I mean,
Storm.
yeah, maybe.
I want to see the brewer decks with
Yeah.
this.
Well, you were just complaining about
I.
how you're gonna spreading seas everyone's Utopia Sprawl,
Well, then
so.
I'll insert Ignovis or the Noble Hierarch, Djund Noble Hierarch, Llanowar Elf, insert those cards
Yeah,
instead. Sorry. It's not
I
just that one
know. The
specifically.
meme decks that this deck card
Yeah.
breeds.
Well, I think it's designed for just the Storm deck, just because your Storm is gonna, typically play your Metamorphos with the green red Storm deck now has a way to gain a mana. Whereas
Yeah,
no,
that
without
card
this
is
card, it
mana ramp.
doesn't. So
It makes all your like rituals only cost one.
that too. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. It does the same thing as Electromancer does for the Storm deck, except instead of it being red blue, it's now gonna be pushed over there.
Oh,
All
this
right, so
card.
this card, it infuriates me. I go back and forth on it, but right now, this card is called Murktide Regent. It's five blue blue. It has Delve. It's a flying dragon. And then when it enters the battlefield, it gets plus one counter for each instance and sorcery exiled with it. So when you delve off of it, it gets a plus one counter. And then whenever an instance or sorcery leaves your graveyard, put a plus one counter on it. So this card seems really, really good to me. But I guess the argument is, at what point is it just a Tombstalker? And then at what point is it better than Tombstalker?
Let's go through the checklists in blue. It's got Delve. It costs a lot of mana, but it delves under two or less. It's got a 3/3 flying body. Yeah, I think this is legacy playable.
Flying as
Me
well.
too. Yeah,
Hold
flying seems
flying
good. So
evasion.
the
It
tone.
doesn't always die to a bolt. This card's obnoxious.
The Tombstalker question. Tombstalker is a 5/5, right?
It's a 5/5
Correct.
flyer, but it's black six, so it's one more. And I mean, right now people play Gurmag Angler because it's one cheaper. So this has the same CMC of like Gurmag Angler, except Gurmag can actually cost a single black, whereas this is mandatory two blue.
So like the reason I think this is like better than Tombstalker at least or whatever is that has a ceiling of 5. This card can come in and be like a 10/10 late game if you really want it to be, like depending on how late the game has gone. Like
Right.
this card has no ceiling, it just keeps getting bigger.
Yeah, I mean, it avoids bolt, it avoids push as well.
My biggest issue in terms of that power is that when you think of something, I know everyone's been talking about it, but you think of like Tome Scouring yourself, that's three cards in the bin immediately, plus a fetch probably, and another fetch the next turn, and you can cast this thing, and you could have three instants or sorceries plus the two fetches in your graveyard to cast a 6/6 on turn two that can't be fatal pushed, bolted, and the only option
I
you really
think,
have
yeah.
is path in like most normal decks.
Modern and then
This
Swords
card,
of Plowshares and Legacy.
blue red Delver
this
deck
card
is
is going to
gonna
be
be
a
so
problem.
dumb with like expressive iteration and this card's very, very. I think this card will end up seeing a ban in Legacy.
It's really good, but right now it's competing with Ethereal Forger, so it's like, does this just completely take its spot when you're just
This
going
is
aggro?
better than
Okay.
Forger.
Because I know Forger has to attack, and Forger can never get bigger. It's a 3/3, right? So it just die. It
yeah.
also dies.
It dies.
So it's more susceptible
Forger
to bolts.
Dies.
Yeah. I mean, also this card can. I guess with Tomb Stalker, when I brought that up, I forgot that this is a blue card. And you can pitch it to Force Will, and it's like, damn.
Yeah. This card's. This card might see a ban. It takes forever to ban cards in Legacy, but as the Delver player here, I definitely will put this in list. I feel like right now, the current list I'm playing, because I'm on the Young Pyromancer build, I wouldn't play this guy because like those spots are too important. But I think like the like proper list that you'll see, the top 8 lists of, will play this over the Forager. And you'll be seeing like a lot of the... What's the blue red dragon? Sprite dragon.
Yeah.
And this guy.
That's
I think
fair.
The deck kind
just
of
better in Pyromancer though, because you are running so many instants and sorceries.
The problem that I play the Young Pyromancer because it plays really well with the Eldraine adventure creatures, and then you still get those like threats as well.
Yeah.
So Delver also isn't very good at card advantage. That deck, like, if I can 1-for-1 you, I'm going to go all day. But by getting Or I'll probably win that match. But having the adventure creatures lets me get that 2-for-1 advantage sometimes. And that's what
right.
that's how I win games with the Delver deck.
So what's interesting to me about talking about putting this in Delver is when you look at the 3-color Delver lists, a lot of them play things like, what's that monkey that has Delve 5? You know, it's 1 green and then 5.
Hooting Mandrills.
Yeah, there you go.
Hooting Mandrills, and it also, if you're playing the black version, you're playing Gurmag Angler, and they're playing that all the time. So this is just, I think this is a better option for those 3-color decks.
Yeah, I forgot about those cards. Yep, you're right.
I think my Young Pyromancer day really build days are coming to an end, and I had a lot of fun while I was doing it, because like, this definitely seems like the right call moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of I hate that it's mythic and I need 4 of them.
I don't know if I want to invest. Like, I don't want to have to. If it hits like Renin 6 prices where it's like $60 a copy. I mean, this set seems like with the packages and like the amount of products that you can buy, I think that like normal versions will be pretty accessible.
Yeah.
But I don't want to. I don't want to see where the prices end up on this card.
I want this card today.
Yeah,
agreed.
All right, Kaldra complete. So this is a 7-mana legendary artifact equipment. It has the ability of a living weapon, which means it comes up with a 0/0 germ, or a germ is attached to it, a 0/0 germ. Indestructible. Equipped creature gets +5/+5 and has first strike, trample, indestructible, haste, and whenever this creature deals combat damage to a creature, exile that creature, and then it also has equipped 7. So a lot of discussion around this card right off the get-go, where I think people are comparing it to Batterskull. In my opinion, it's still worse than Batterskull, but the fact that it itself has indestructible demands that, and the creature gains indestructible, demands that you need a exile spell or a bounce spell.
And that's what's crazy to me, is that because of Stoneforge being a real card and easily usable, this card, I didn't even read it at first. I just saw a living weapon and I'm like, it's probably all right. You know, maybe it's a replacement. But when I saw, like, you get a big old body that can never be touched that has trample, as well as indestructible and haste, it kind of made me go, I probably play this over that.
Them
in combination.
I'm mad that it's an artifact equipment and not a creature. There will be a germ token before we get an actual Kaldra token.
Yeah,
but
there is a
incoming
token.
Secret layer where you get 4 cards and 2 tokens, one never before released before.
I don't even know what Kaldra is. Right. I know nothing about.
It's a throwback to Mirrodin.
Oh, yeah,
I think Mirrodin each
card.
There's the sword, the helm, and then shield. What is it? Shield. And once you have all 3 of them, you get
the set symbols for the Mirrodin block.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's Kaldra.
Okay.
Yeah, it's essentially you get the summon Exodia, and you know, don't win. You don't get to win the game with this Exodia.
It's nowhere near as good as Exodia. It's like a 5/5 or something. It's terrible.
You get a infinite blocker though. For 1 mana or whatever.
Yeah. Those were the rare equipments, and then cranial plating had common that just completely dominated the format. Like, what the hell?
It was like a definitely like a Vorthos Timmy card.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I think this card in combination with Stoneforge, So I like it in two different lists. In the sense, I would play this in the sideboard maybe of like a blue-white control. So when you go against like mirrors, if you're playing like a Stoneforge package, this just eliminates other planeswalkers. It comes in and it has haste, and it's a 5-5. So it's going to hit your opponent's planeswalkers pretty hard. Mm-hmm. So I think there's no planeswalker that survives from it immediately. And then in more of a mono-white shell where you get to play Piercer Paladin and be able to move it and give like incoming creatures haste, and then +5/+5. That's where I think those are the two abilities. And also you get to do the dumb stuff of Sigarda's Aid, but realistically Sigarda's Aid, you're never gonna get to 7 mana with this card, so I think that's where it is going to land. The best part about this mythic is you only need a copy of it. Like, I don't see any list playing 2, 3, 4 copies. Right. It's gonna be a singleton, so all the EDH players, you know, congratulations, you get this card and it's not going to be too expensive. And then everybody else is playing like Stoneforge X lists, they're probably going to pick up one copy and try this card, right?
You all get the mystery or the pre-order collector pack versions. The collector pack version of this card will be chased.
Oh yeah, for sure. All right, man, on to the next card. Esper's Sentinel. Boy. A white for an artifact creature, human soldier. Whenever an opponent casts their first non-creature spell, each turn draw a card unless that player pays X, where X is Esper Sentinel's power. This is a fixed Mystic Remora, but it's on a creature and also randomly a human. This card, I think, is going to be all over the place in Legacy.
I'm so mad that it's a human. Like, the flavor doesn't even make sense. Like, it should be, yeah, like, really. Like, you look at it, and, like, at first you're like, wow, this is a human, and it's an artifact creature. Like, it should have been a Vedalken or whatever, an Aetherborn, something.
I'm telling you right now, I'm playing this in my Terminus decks. Like, so when I go against, like, my other control matchups, I'm bringing this in.
Every single white EDH deck, this is...
Oh, yeah. It can be fetchable with Trinket Mage for whatever reason.
Oh, what? I didn't even notice that.
Wow. Yeah, it's stupid. It's got a lot of dumb text on it. It's randomly human, so I don't know if like Death and Taxes or the modern version of humans will play this card. It probably will. This card's really, really good.
Thalia's gross.
Well, even like you do, imagine if you equipped a sword to this. Now you have to pay 3 to counter the ability.
Aether Sworn Canonist or whatever.
Also, in combination.
A backpack that kills you.
Also, in multiples, it's so good. Oh, you're going to play a Supreme Verdict? Right? I guess I get to draw two. Like, what?
I was going to say. Master
of Aetherion, you could go, oh, the curve is so dumb. Yeah. You go this, then the Canonist, then Master of Aetherium.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And your opponent just cries.
Mm-hmm.
And in regards to humans in Modern, isn't there that human that puts tokens on, or 1/1s on all the other humans?
Yeah, Thalia's Lieutenant. So, it's going to be an auto-include, I believe, in that deck. And maybe there's going to be a more of a mono-white version than rather a 5-color version.
Mm-hmm. The humans deck has, like, too many good cards to pick from now.
Right. I just think like this is probably going to be paired best with like a Death and Taxes list for sure. I think they just auto slot this in. I think it's a 4 of. I don't know why you play less just because it's so. Don't get me wrong. Your opponents, most of the time when this card comes down, they're just going to let you draw a card and swords it. But that means that swords is not there for your Thalia or your other kind of utility creatures.
And like we got the on the screen that we're looking at, we have the sketch variant up. And even in the art description, it says a human with a mix of flesh and of Aetherium found on the magical metal found on Esper. So, like, this card's from Esper. Are there any other artifact humans from Esper, or is this the first one?
Aether Sworn Canonist, I guess. Is that a card? That's a human from randomly.
Okay.
Human. Okay.
I didn't
think I know. It's bizarre.
Artifact humans before, so maybe I, like, tread back on my hate a little bit, because I was like, I've never seen an artifact creature human before.
They're usually, like, a Vedalken of some kind. Yeah, that's even too. What's the Aetherium Sculptor, the 1/2? He's also a human randomly. He's not like the picture of Aetherium Sculptor looks like a tiger to me when I first look at it, but it's actually just like a really small guy like constructing something. A
little tiny guy.
Yeah, I was about to say, I know the Shards block had a couple more than just the Aether Sworn Canonist and stuff, so. Yeah.
This card's for sure going to be a problem, and if you have a hard time fitting, you know, let's just stuff it in there. It's gonna just cause so much card advantage. Yes, don't get me wrong, there are gonna be situations where it's not as good, but it can be fetched with the Fruit of the Guard, so that's an ability to go get it. You have the white one for EDH reasons too, the Ranger that can also go get it. Like, it's just there's so many ways to fetch this card with random other creatures.
Mm-hmm. I hate that I have to figure out when this in Thalia is on the board which one I'm supposed to bolt.
It's probably this card. I would leave Thalia alone. Yeah. This card is just it's there to so just... Gross. You can't let them draw cards.
Right. No, I'm not looking forward to this card.
It's going to be everywhere. All right. On to my next card.
That's all you got, boy. That's 3.
No, sorry, I added... I want to talk about one more card. Yeah. Sorry, there's a card that I was saving for the best card in the set. I do truly think it's the best card in the set, and I think it's Ravagon? Let me see its name. I gotta look it up real quick.
I was like, I already think I know what the best card. And then we had this slight discussion before.
Hold on, I got it. It's Ragavan Nimble Pilferer. It is one red for a legendary creature, Monkey Pirate. Whenever Ragavan Nimble Pilferer deals combat damage to a player, create a treasure token and exile the top card of that player's deck. Until end of turn, you may cast that card. And it has dash for one and a red. And it's a 2/1.
So into the burn players.
No, I actually don't think this card's a burn. I don't think this is a burn card. And the reason why is because the way to get advantage off this card is over like turns 4, 5, and 6 and burn once and end the game of there. Just imagine, let's look at this card and then pretend its stats are 1/3. This card is Dreadhorde Arcanist.
I guess.
It immediately, you have to answer it. Like if I go turn one this, what do you have to answer it? You can't let me just get one Lotus Petals every turn to increase to my, you know, like going farther in the game, and you can't let me just steal cards off your deck. There's just no way.
God, I'm so excited for this card, and I want to see
you,
it.
I think you play this in Delver. I think
I was
it's so
say,
good.
I want to see it in Modern
definitely
too.
Was gonna say I definitely want to put one in the blue red Delver list that I have.
I mean, and we already have a card that's kind of like this, and it already like is gross and standard with Robert of the Riches, where you swing and you just steal your opponent's cards, right. And that doesn't even mana ramp you, and that card is already a problem.
Yeah. I think that you're thinking if this does, the problem is why it doesn't go into burn, because burn is just trying to attack you and throw spells as fast as possible. This card is just Dreadhorde. Like, it's okay. Right. It's not a 1/1 to Dreadhorde, but Dreadhorde has the same arguments where it needed to be bolted, it needed to be you know, swords, it needed to be the path, you know, fatal push. Same thing. If you don't have, if I go turn one this and I'm like, let's say I'm blue white and I don't have removal for it, it is so punishing because now you get to play like 3 and 4 drops. So I think you have to look at
your,
this is
you
more
get
of a
removal with the monkey.
Dude, it's so gross. It just demands. If I play this card and you play Delver of Secrets, I think you have to block with your Delver.
Because you're just gonna steal their brainstorm.
What are, you're gonna take card and you're gonna get, so this card on turn two
just
lets you have 3 mana.
Response and put my land on top.
Sure. Then I took.
And
I mean,
then I wasted my brainstorm. I guess.
Yeah, and then well, also you. What are you gonna have 2 mana on turn one? Good luck. Like, would you have Delver and brainstorm at the same time?
You're forgetting my Simian Spirit Guide.
Yeah, that makes red. Doesn't do anything.
Either of those spells.
Yeah. My Merfolk Spirit Guide.
No, legit. I think this card is.
It's really
good. I think it's the best card of the set. I think it's gonna play a lot it's like Dreadhorde did. So I think that's where the problem of this card is going to come. And we don't see it immediately because you see a 2/1 and you think 2/1s are just like, okay, well, you know, 2/1s are not that. They're not that great. Well, Dreadhorde was a 1/3 and it wasn't that great, but all it did was create advantage. This creates mana and then potential advantage from your opponent's deck.
Does this
like, give... This card is just, it just feels so bad.
Does this give home legs run to like a Zoo deck in Modern again?
Probably.
And Zoo's dead. Forget that deck. Don't ever play that deck.
I don't know what to say about Modern. I don't want to make any like forecasts on like what will be good in Modern. I couldn't tell you what's good anyway.
Yeah,
but I think like the format's going to open up so wide that like you'll have a lot of options.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about Modern Horizons too, just like briefly on what I think it's done to Legacy, or what it's kind of done to both Legacy and kind of Modern. For Modern, it's brought in like potential dead archetypes from Legacy that no longer are valid. Like, I know Reanimator still kind of exists, but that's been like fringe playable for a while. And in Legacy, like those diehard players that are still playing like Reanimator or Enchantress, those have just now they have an ability to port over to Modern with some of the spells that they've kind of created. And they've definitely thrown like Sterling Grove and things like that. And I also think they've color shifted a lot of cards. So things open up, like the Collected Company example. Now, like traditionally, when I thought Collected Company, I always assumed it was either going to be Naya, Bant, or, you know, Bant Spirits that also played it, and then also just straight up blue or green white, and then Abzan. But now with Jund, you can just avoid the white and go somewhere else with this ability.
You had to play white before.
Yeah, right. And with this, I think that's the beauty of what this set is. I've never been so excited, and it's like, I don't want to like overstimulate it just because there's so many cards coming in like simultaneously, and I don't know what to buy, to be honest. Like, I'd love to be able to buy 4x of everything this set, but it's probably going to be like a couple G's. So, it's legit, and like I've never felt that way about anything else. Like Modern Horizons 1, I didn't feel like I had to buy the entire. I knew like I had to go get Force of Vigor and Force of like Negation because I knew those cards were going to be good. As far as Hogak, I missed the boat on that. Look how many one drops are printed that are going to be probably format staples.
I think there's a lot of like format designing stuff in here.
Right, and I think it's fantastic. Not only just for like Modern players, and we're coming back into like FNMs. So just the awakening of like all these people that have to kind of upgrade their decks, which I think is going to be really interesting. Right.
Like what we were talking about last week, where standard or modern's the new standard, where like everyone wants to, pimp out and keep their modern deck up to date so they can, go to FNM and play with their friends, make new friends.
So I guess I want to talk about kind of the excitement of FNM. We, like I said earlier in the show, that we're fortunate enough to have places open up, and just the ability to be able to see people I haven't seen for a year plus just gets me very excited. And I've seen people just kind of awaken on like Facebook, like, wait, where is the FNM happening? We're in like all these like little murmurs, and just seeing people that I haven't seen for a year plus, and then being able to sling like cards physically, and maybe even get to like a tournament that has more than 8 people. I have done in-person tournaments that have been less than like 15, 16 people, but I really do miss that feeling of just being in like a group. Like, it's FNM's a hangout, and I miss doing that.
I think we're gonna walk into like 30 people on Friday.
I think so too.
Yeah, I'm
So.
pumped to get back and start playing more and more. I don't know exactly where the groups are going to go, and it may turn into us just doing Legacy once a month, which isn't terrible, but I don't know. We'll see.
We're gonna walk in and it's gonna be like boom, round one, Josh versus Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
As always.
As always.
I'm excited to sit down and play Magic for 10 minutes in person each round.
Yeah. So I truly am excited for this, and for me it's whatever format's going to dictate. So whenever the first announcement of a large tournament series that's going to come around here, or even like a Grand Prix level event or a small 1K, whatever format that is, where I'm going to be focusing primarily on, assuming that it's not standard. If it's Pioneer, if it's Modern, if it's Legacy Hell, if it's Heads Up Commander, I'm going to try to get ready for that event, because just I miss the competitive edge. You can
Grind.
simulate, yeah. I miss the grind, and then also I miss like the like you can kind of simulate it on Magic Online, but it's just nowhere near as like fun. It's Magic Online is used for like practice, and then
Great
actual in-game
practice.
play, you get to do a lot of bluffing and stuff like that. I just miss those interactions.
I'm excited to leave the house.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, guys. I'm gonna just do my question of the week. So, Jeff or JB, just go ahead and create a little Tony's question of the week. Yeah, do something cool like that. All
Tony's
right.
question of the week, week.
Yeah, cue that up, cut that, edit it, make it a recurring thing. I want it all the time.
I'm not cutting any of that.
Yeah, just the chaotic nonsense of us yelling in the mics. I guess what this is like a popular, or not so much of a popular question, but this is kind of a lot of the Magic community doesn't really think the same on this. But if you could port a IP to Magic, what would it be? I guess I'll start with you, JB.
I mean, I'm gonna say that I want more anime trash in my
Oh my
card
gosh.
games,
Nice.
and I don't have any specific IP from anime that I would like, but I would definitely take some more garbage in my deck. I've been a really big proponent of the idea of having different printings for every single card in my deck, and I think it would be great to just have a pile of cards that don't match at all, and are all still, like a full-on regular 60 card competitive deck.
Tony, my favorite, my that friend of yours who has that EDH deck that's like all
Oh,
cards from different card games.
yeah, it's the best. He's got
Yeah,
the
that's great.
he's got a 100 card EDH deck that has card names from different games of all, whatever game, either it be Yu-Gi-Oh, you name it, and it's actual a one-to-one representation of
Like
it's
the forest
fascinating to
or
look
from
at.
like Catan or something like
Yeah,
that.
it's got all it's really cool.
Far as IP I'd bring over, I'd actually have to say Legend of Zelda.
Pretty
I
cool
think
one.
that'd be awesome.
Pretty sweet. Got some legendaries in there that you can get,
Oh
and you
yeah.
definitely have some equipment that
There
you
would be
can bring
some
over.
cool flavor with that.
Hell yeah, man.
And Josh, you got anything for me?
I don't like bringing the IPs into Magic. I don't like any of it. Absolutely zero of it. I want Magic to stay Magic, but I guess the one that where I like you're like I have to think of something. I went to my brain, and the first thing I came up with was Pokemon. I think that would be a knockout. That would be knocked out of the
You could
park,
do like
though.
a brand
Probably,
new mechanic with that, like capture. I don't
right.
know.
That would probably break like every single store that sells cards would probably like hate Wizards for creating the Magic the Gathering Pokemon mashup booster pack, which would like immediately cause like people to kill each other in the streets to get packs. But that's like the one that would probably I would probably like smile if I saw a there's already like test prints of Dark Blastoise with the Magic card
Oh,
back
nice. I didn't know that.
from how whatever year that was 1990 whatever, but I think the Pokemon would make me smile.
It did almost say Digimon before Legend of Zelda.
Mm-hmm. Pokemon makes money. Digimon does not make money. Sorry, dude.
I know. I just always like Digimon, man. What would be your IP, Tony?
I don't know, man. I go all over the place. It's just mainly like in the video game world, but realistically, I like the game I have the most affinity for, especially for my childhood, is either Diablo 2 or Warcraft 3. And Warcraft 3 already has like its own card game, or what you name it, in Hearthstone. But Diablo 2 would probably be where I would want to go. Yeah. Just having like Legendary Kane and like legend, like all the cow people, like all the just those references that are there.
The Cow King, yes.
Yeah.
I love Diablo 2. I actually just rebought that from Blizzard on my computer like 2 weeks ago.
Shouldn't have done that. They're awesome. Doing the they're getting the.
I know, it was $8, man.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, I'm not sweating it.
he's gotta get good before the new one comes out. Yeah, that way he can do it all over again.
I just want to play the Necromancer again.
Me too. I love that guy.
What if instead of IPs, they started the Magic the Gathering sports card mashup and you get your legendary Aaron Rodgers magic card? That's the best magic card that's ever been printed.
Card's only good to trade.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love it. Nice. Set him up. All right. On that note, guys, I think that's the show. You know, JB, play us the outro. You know what to do.